Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 237 for September 9th, 2019. We are recording at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Today, we will be discussing the 311th weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at that yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports and you could get access to either the web or PDF version there. Just a reminder too that the recordings for all these episodes are available on YouTube and also as audio only podcasts on your favorite podcast directory. So just search for Timing Research and subscribe. Today I have arranged for Jake Ujastic of TrendSpider.com, Eric Gebhardt of AltaVest.com, and Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. And Jim will be moderating, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, thank you, David. And we have a very big show here today, two very great guests, and we've got a lot going on. This week we've got the ECB having a meeting, and there's some talk of when Lagarde takes over that there could be some fiscal stimulus. We've got next week a Fed meeting, and while the S&P's had some trouble here today maintaining its gains, the Russell and the Dow Jones transports have actually jumped above their 50 and 200-day moving averages, and we've seen some things like energy stocks tick up a little bit. Tech and semis are doing okay. Treasuries have rolled over to the downside in price. Yields are coming up, and the gold is having a little bit of a pullback here on some pretty significant volume. So there's quite a bit going on, and these are two guys who are going to be able to help us go through the forest and see some of the trees here. We have two guests, Jake Ujastic and Eric Gebhardt. We're going to start out with Jake, who's going to give you a quick background on himself, a little bit about what TradeSpider's up to. And Jake, what do you have?
Sure. So my background, I'm one of the founding members of TrendSpider. I have been trading for about 15 years now and studied economics in college, so was able to kind of put together how supply and demand and prices work in the market. And so now at TrendSpider, what we do, we try to make the whole process of technical analysis more efficient, but we also try to create new ways to visualize supply and demand in the market. And so that's something that we've really been working on innovating. One of those ways is through our Blue Raindrops, which I posted a chart on Twitter of. So if anyone's listening live, they can check out what I'll be talking about there. And yeah, so thank you guys so much for having me. And that's a little bit of a background on me.
Thanks, Jake. And there's a lot to go through, and I'm sure you'll have some great charts possibly to show us as well. Eric, you always bring a lot of information to the table here. Could you give a little background on yourself and what's going on at AltaVest?
Yeah, sure thing. Absolutely. Thanks, Jim. Well, I've been in this business since 1991, almost before there was electricity. So it's been quite a few years now, and started AltaVest with my friend Mike, and we did that in 1997. We're a brokerage firm. We focus on futures and the futures markets, but in more specifically futures and futures options. And we do option spreads. That's our specialty. Maybe 15, 20 years ago, we started getting very involved with options, and in particular, collecting premium. So we like to take, I guess you could call it, the higher probability side of a trade. Buying options is fine, but we like selling options better. So we created a technology with an algorithm that we developed over the years that will actually generate trading opportunities on the E-mini S&P 500 market. So we're trading spreads on that market, covered spreads, and our algorithm basically gives us the spread for every day, and then it will automatically track that particular trade and then execute an order when it reaches a particular profit or target threshold. And that can all be done also with your smartphone. And we like just selling premium, and oftentimes even in a non-directional manner. So we don't always have a particular bullish or bearish bias. There's a lot of opportunity with a market neutral outlook. So that's a lot of what we do.
Sure. And later in the broadcast, maybe we can get a little bit deeper into how you come about, or how the software comes about, which side of the market or which strike price or that kind of thing, how far out to go, because there's a lot of questions that have to be answered. And I'm sure, investors have a lot of questions on how to make those decisions as well. Okay, well, we're going to start out with question one, which is, where will the S&P 500 index be between today's opening, which looks like around 2988, and Friday's close? And up first is going to be Jake. Jake, what's your take on that question?
Well, Looking at the markets this weekend, I did kind of think that we were going to possibly pull back to the 294 area just to kind of retest that area of previous resistance. But at the same time, I did think the weekly candle looked pretty good. So I personally think we're probably going to pull back, especially after seeing some of the responses. 70% think that, you know, we may be moving higher. Generally, if there's that big of a kind of discrepancy and you know, bullish versus bearish, I kind of take the contrarian side. So that kind of confirms maybe the pullback for me, but I do think we'll probably retest the 294. But that's solely my opinion. I'm not licensed or an advisor or anything like that. But if I had to guess, I would have alert set down around 294.
Yeah, and everything we say today is an opinion and our own thoughts. So obviously, it has to be kept in that context. With regards to Eric, how do you feel about that question? Where's the market going to be from today's opening to Friday's close?
Well, you know, every time I think the market's ready to pull back, it's not. So maybe I'm the indicator we should be looking at. An indicator. But no, I know exactly what Jake is saying, and I completely understand that position. But I just have to look at some of the basics that we like to look at. We're looking at just a week, you know. So when I look at a graph, a daily chart, and I'm looking at, you know, a 200-day moving average or even a 50-day moving average, maybe there's not really that applicable, you know, to that time frame. But nonetheless, you know, we're trading above both the 50 and 200-day moving average. We have some positive readings on a couple of the indicators we follow. One is the MACD, and then we kind of have a more of a neutral indicator reading on the RSI. But we're trading above all of our moving averages. And, you know, there's also something interesting that I've been looking at for, since the early 90s. There's a group that does seasonal analysis, the Moore Research Center. And so I will glance at what they're doing and what their statistics show. And they just basically look back in time, crunch the data, and they can have windows of time in which they'll tell you, you know, historically speaking, what has this market done. So beginning on September 1st through, let's see here, I'll show you. Oh, September 9th, beginning on September 9th, all the way through September 19th, historically speaking, the December mini S&P 500 has rallied 14 out of those 15 years for average profit of over $1,300. So 93% historical chance, or at least not chance, let's just say historically speaking, 93% of the time, the market has rallied during this period of time. So, you know, with that in mind and knowing, you know, what the trend is, I don't suspect a whole lot's going to happen until next week, but it could be wrong. But nonetheless, I'm going to say we're going to close higher.
Sure. Okay. And the confidence level, Jake, what number would you attach to your confidence level that we might be a little bit lower by the end of the week?
Not very confident in that. The reason for my kind of possible pullback here, and right, you can see this on the chart that I posted on Twitter, we did have a blue raindrop on Thursday, which is sometimes a signal of volatility in the market. And we did have something similar back in June when we did have a big move up within about 15 trading days, pulled back right to that previous area of resistance, and then just ripped right up. So, I'm not that confident in it because the market's been really headline driven. We could have just a huge, you know, some just really breakthrough news this week that could push us higher. So I'm let's say 45%.
Something like the Taliban's over at Baskin Robbins having ice cream or something like that.
You never know these days what's
going to
happen.
I mean, you just never know. I almost fell out of my chair that they were going to be having a barbecue or whatever they were doing over there. All right. So anyway, let's talk about confidence level, Eric. How do you feel?
All right. Well, as much as I would like to see a much bigger pullback, it's difficult to push this market lower, it seems, no matter what the news is, no matter what the headlines. You know, it seems like, every pullback is, you know, a buying opportunity. So, I would give it, let's just go with a 60% confidence level on that. You know, that's just sort of going along with, the sentiment, and, you know, maybe it's a little bit too bullish, like Jake pointed out, but, I think the S&P, I think the market has those new highs in its, in sight. So, probably going to keep, especially after next week. I mean, once you get that behind us, there's probably some clean air.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I mean, they did hit all the stops at 29.50. There has to be a whole bunch above 30.30. And right. Somebody loves to sell into this short covering and then get their positions on that side. So it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to make a run at the 30.27 number before the Fed meeting and get any stops that might be remaining above it. Because there was a ton of stops, I would imagine, above 29.40, 29.50, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when you say not a conspiracy theorist, I mean, I completely agree. You don't even have to be. I mean, it's just a matter of
reality,
self-fulfilling prophecy in a lot of ways. And you have a lot of algo trading now, machine-driven trading. So, you know, absolutely. There's got to be quite literally millions of buy stops, above those highs there. Not necessarily on just that one contract, but generally speaking.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're not even close to being overbought on any particular indicator. And even on the shorter term or shorter duration graphs. And, you know, I'm looking at candlesticks sometimes and I'm just getting no particular reading out of the candlesticks that would suggest, a whole lot of resistance at the moment. So, in fact, that resistance, like those new highs we talked about, is almost a target.
Yeah, a lot of guys use the technical way of trading, like Trend Spider, and also software like you're using, Eric, because if you're just looking at things, you've got the VIX that went down towards 15, but now it's above 15, and that's kind of a line in the sand. If you start trading 14, 12, you're obviously going to be taking off to the upside. And then you've got the transports and the Russell, which have been lagging dogs, looking like they're coming to life, yet the S&P is dropping. And so that's why sometimes people use software and technical analysis and things like that, because the actual visual is a little bit confusing. And 100%. It takes a lot of the emotion out, because right now, I mean, I just rattled off a bunch of things that are plus and minus on the markets right now. Well, let's go right now over to some of the reasons you think, and you already covered some of these, so we could be brief. But Jake, you know, if the market were to roll over, you mentioned sentiment. Anything else on the radar that might indicate, is there something at this 3,000 mark that could serve as a barrier so you can't get to the 30-30?
Sometimes I'm just a believer that if something's too obvious in the market, it's just not going to happen. So I've just done a lot of just reading on Twitter and stuff this week, and it just sounded everyone was ultra bullish, not even in this survey, but just in general. So I really think just overall, just the market kind of doing exactly opposite of what everyone thinks it's going to do this week. But there's not really a reason other than more of a technical, reasoning. And then, you know, we're due for some type of tweet to say China's, we're going to back out from a trade deal or something. So that's kind of my rationale.
And one of the other thing that we just talked about, you know, with the Russell and the transports that have been laggers, there could be a rotation out of the bigger S&P stocks into some of those ones that are turning up that maybe offer better value to people than buying things on their all-time high. So there could be that going on too.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. And Eric, did you have some other reasons behind, you mentioned that obviously they're above the moving averages, which is certainly not a negative. And was there any other things you can kind of see that might turn us up a little bit?
Well, even looking at a different time frame, I'm looking at a 60-minute chart, beyond just the daily and the weekly graph. And, you know, the 60-minute chart sort of offers additional confirmation. So just looking at different at time horizons. And I think you do that too, right, Jake, with your software. You guys can look at analysis and compare different time frames, with one another. So that's pretty helpful. And so just looking quite simply at, the shorter duration time charts, I think that adds a lot of context and a bit of a confirmation to the uptrend. I don't see any, at the same time, there's, it's one of those things too, where you look at a chart and of course, depending how you scale it, oh, gee, it can't go any higher. It's at the top, right? I've had people tell me, well, it can't go any higher. It's at the top of the chart. I'm not realizing, of course, charts are a moving target. In fact, I had that years ago where we were trading the S&P and, turned out we ended up doing something on a trade where, you end up selling the low, so to speak. And then the rest of the chart plays out and then you show it to somebody and then they kind of shake their head. Well, why would you sell there? Why would you do that? Not realizing that they're referring to 2020 hindsight when they look at all the data afterwards, right? So, anyway. But yeah, I like looking at other time frames, and you know, I just think as much as you get tweets from the president or you know, news out of the White House or news out of China or about China, you know, at the same time you have other news, you have all the jobs data, so forth, that seems to be very strong still from last week, and wages are increasing and unemployment staying at record lows. And you know, so, you know, there's always good, and, you know, there's always a way to look at things through, you know, and find the answer you're already kind of pre-biased towards if you, it's difficult to be objective, I guess. So just trying to be objective, you know, there's still really not a whole lot out there that I think is going to bring this market to its knees, unless, you know, of course you have some sort of black swan. So I don't know, I think you just have to stay with the trend. That's a long way of saying it.
Yeah. The numbers, you know, the numbers are still constructive. You just always live in fear from the standpoint of something coming out of the White House that would change everything around. With regards to different trade ideas, now, Jake, you know, at Trend Spider, do you mostly, because I'm going to ask questions as if I was a viewer here, do you mostly stick with the stock market? And is there one certain or a group of sectors that you focus on? Or are you doing commodities and stocks? Which one, what are you doing as far as what are you following with Trend Spider? Or you could do any market.
So for TrendSpider, we are more of the platform to provide just ways to do technical analysis. So we're not necessarily following any type of sector or anything like that. We do provide data for U.S. stocks, crypto, Forex, delayed indice data, and end of day future data. So it's really whatever, you know, our users are really looking at. So we don't do any trading ourselves as far as a group at TrendSpider. But, you know, I generally like to, especially right now, like oil stocks have just been ripping. So that's something I've been watching, like CHK. That took a huge dive last month, and it's really starting to come back to life. So, but some of these ones seem a little hot as well. So we'll just have to see what happens. But like CHK, MRO, those are some of the ones I'm watching right now.
And MRO?
Marathon Oil, yep.
Yeah, because I've seen some of the higher yielding energy stocks like you know, Royal Dutch trying to make a turn, but they're having a hard time really bouncing that far.
Yeah, the MRO is right on a previous kind of resistance, which was support before. So that's kind of what I'm looking for to break through. And CHK, the same thing. It seems like it's gone up a lot, but it's also dropped a huge amount. So just kind of paying attention to see if those start to break out, and you know, those may help things move higher as well.
Now there is one that Jerry Jones was on TV, his involvement, he was explaining his involvement, and CRK was the symbol, and it's gone from about 750 up to about 925, 930, backing off a little bit today. But have you been following Comstock Resources at all? Because there seems to be some kind of a story there.
I have not. No, I have not
heard that one. I thought it was pretty interesting. He explained why he was making a very big investment in it. He said it was a long-term investment, but obviously in the short term, people are specking at least that he might have something there. Any other sectors that you're following, Jake, that might you see something? I mean, you know, Europe, like FEZ and emerging markets, EEM, you know, they seem to be trying to make a turn. And of course, the treasury market, you know, was that a blow off when we went up to those levels with the yields at 140 and change? Or is this just a pullback? What's your stuff kind of indicating?
Honestly, we haven't been paying too much attention to that. So, you know, for us, like I said, we're really just not on the paying attention to the daily kind of day-to-day international stuff. So with us being a startup, our main goal is really just creating these new indicators and that type of thing that visualize volume and price. So I just don't have an opinion on that.
Yeah, being the platform, you're basically have something that everyone can use for whatever purpose. Is it mostly used for short-term trading, like day trading or swing trading, or is it being used for all types of motives?
So generally when I do have time to trade, I'm swing trading. So I'm building a position, and then, you know, that could be a couple weeks, that could be a month. So almost like a swing dash position trader. So for me, I'm not really using it as a day trader, but a lot of our users do use it for day trading. There's a lot of different alerts that you can create. If you're looking at, let's say, a 1 minute candle versus a 5 minute, or you want to be alerted when the, let's say, the 5 minute moving average crosses above the 15 15-minute moving average. So there's a lot of different things you can do with it as far as functionality goes. So that's how most intraday traders are using it, with the alerts and that type of thing.
And since it's a platform, there's many different ways to look at it. You know, candlesticks, moving averages. You have relative strength things and MACD and all that kind of stuff on there.
Oh yeah, it's at the base. It's you know, a charting platform. So we have the lower indicators. We have upper indicators. One cool thing that we have the ability to do is overlay longer term price levels on shorter term price action. So for example, if you want to overlay the monthly moving average onto a daily chart, you can see how the daily price action is interacting with that longer term, let's say Bollinger Band or whatever you're looking at.
Yeah. In other words, if your longer term momentums are pointing down, but the shorter term is moving up, you would be more vigilant to see if this rally might end because the longer term momentum is still pointing down.
Yeah. So actually that's one feature we're working on, is the ability to kind of look for those discrepancies and inefficiencies where price action is doing one thing and then the lower indicators are doing something else. So that's definitely kind of the route we're taking, making the whole process more efficient, easier to find setups like that where you're looking for mainly discrepancies in price and indicators.
And is there some support behind the platform where if people have questions or they're not sure of what they're looking at or they need to know a little bit more about what is on the menu?
Yes, trendspider.com. You can find everything you need. We have a chat bot that immediately comes up, and then if you respond, it will immediately take you to a live customer success rep. So everything is really personalized. If you have a question, you'll be talking to somebody live once you respond to that little page that pops up, and sure, we can walk you through whatever you need.
That's great. All right, Eric, let's get you back in the game here a little bit on what we are looking at AltaVest as far as, you know, different market setups or things that you're seeing that might be of interest to the listener.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I mentioned we're doing a lot of option spreads on the E-mini complex. So E-mini S&P 500, as well as the E-mini NASDAQ 100 and Russell 2000. But primarily, we look at the S&P 500. That's where the vast majority of the liquidity is. There's a lot of depth there. There's just a lot of growth in that space in the last decade in particular. So there's so much volume in that space. It's much easier to execute these option trades with real tight bid and offers. So that's where we're spending a lot of our time. But when you also mentioned what are clients talking about, you know, I have to mention, I don't know if this is going to take us too far afield, but the gold market, you know, a lot of people always seem to have an interest in gold, and it has quietly taken off, as I'm sure you are both aware. But you know, just in the last couple of months, we were down around, well, below 1300, and just about a week ago, we're around 15. I think the high was around 1560 or something like that on the December gold futures. So approaching that 1600 level, that's a pretty big rally. And I know that there's one analyst, Mark Mobius. He mentioned buy gold at any price. He's been saying that for a while now, so you know, maybe now is his time to shine. But I have to chuckle at that, and maybe there's some truth to that as a part of you know, someone's overall investment portfolio. But that's not what we do. You know, we're not money managers or anything like that, or portfolio managers. But just kind of as a side note, but from a trading perspective, you know, certainly a pullback since we've had off the recent highs here in that December gold contract does make gold a little bit more appealing to buy at this level compared to a week ago. But, you know, looking at some of the Fibonacci numbers, you could even be down to around 1460. That's to be a 38% retracement from this last bull move. 50% retracement might be a good opportunity as well. A lot of congestion down there, around 14.25. So if people are looking at gold and they want to get in, maybe they might consider placing some orders ahead of time and buying in those levels.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the mantra of we want inflation back up, we want rates very low, we want the dollar to drop, and we're going to run deficits through the roof. You know, they couldn't sing a better song for gold.
Right, right.
And then you throw on top of that they just did $150 billion of investment grade last week, which are a record. You got $16 trillion in negative yielding bonds. It was only $5 trillion or so last year. And you have to say to yourself, if they stimulate in Europe, and if they get things going and organized where Asia comes back, and we go on any kind of a run towards 3,600 on the S&P, somebody's going to want to get out of those bonds because they're not going to be wanting stuck on negative yielding things if the train's leaving. And who the heck is going to buy negative yielding bonds if the train's leaving the station as far as growth and earnings? So, you know, the mantra out there is we're going into a recession and rates are going to zero. And the louder it gets, the more people are involved in it. And the more people that are involved in it, the more subscribed the idea is. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how things shake out. I think when Powell said we have a mid-cycle adjustment here, I think what he's saying is that things, he just said there's no recession that he sees. You know, everyone is betting. You know, I think Jake made a good point on how he doesn't like to get in. He didn't want too many people at the party when he gets there. I think the party of we're going into a recession and rates are going to zero is a pretty darn big party right now. So
I definitely agree there too. I think, you know, it's, I am more on the side that we're going to go up in the longer term. I just think there's going to be some type of little pullback to get a nice base formed at that previous resistance. And then, you know, I think we can go up from there.
Yeah.
I mean, when everyone in the media is talking about an issue, usually, you know, you want to fade them, right? I mean, I don't want to sound cynical, but there's, you know, especially lately, I mean, there's so much noise in the media and, you know, everyone's going on and on about recession, which, you know, maybe is a really great indicator that it's not going to happen. But nonetheless, it's creating a lot of movement, that's for sure. And, you know, you did have the VIX up above 20, you know, and then we've settled back down. And of course, that indicates, you know, stocks will rally. So, you know, that's kind of the place to be, it seems. It's kind of hard to, you know, isn't that the whole goal of the Federal Reserve of late? It seems, at least in the last, for 10 years or so, their mandate sort of shifted. And now their whole goal seems to be to drive people, you know, keep them from being savers. And drive them into being investors, into risk assets.
So, and even speculators at some point, right?
Right.
With regards to Eric, I just want to ask you a question, you know, to get a little more clarity with at AltaVest. When you're doing these credit spreads, basically on the S&P, do you find that the bid offers are tight enough generally to get these things executed at a decent price?
Yeah, almost always. Absolutely. You know, there's the edge in that marketplace in terms of execution is as small as it can be. The spreads are very, very tight. So generally speaking, if you're, you know, like we're looking at, let's say today you wanted to place a trade that had kind of a bullish bias. And let's say that meant that you wanted to sell a put spread. So for example, one of our models today would be the October, 29 days till expiration. And this would be selling the 28.25 put and then buying the 28.05 put. So we're, you know, as you know, we're trading around, what are we at now? 29.85 mm-hmm. approximately. But, so anyway, you're selling these options as a spread. You're trying to get this order filled. Let's see the price on that. We try to get that filled at about $1.80, at 1.8. It would be the fill price on that. So very rarely do we have trouble getting orders filled in that particular market. There's just a lot of depth and there's just a lot of volume and activity. So it's really not an issue. And in fact, it's there's studies done, of course, conveniently by the CME Group, which is where these vehicles trade. But you know, they've either done some third party studies and or done their own. But you know, they talk about the execution and you know the depth. I think there's something like 8 times the volume compared to a lot of other individual issues. And you know, unless you're trading the really, really large issues on the, you know, like the Facebooks and so forth like that, you start getting into some of the stocks that don't really have as much, you know, of that headline attention. You're not going to be able to get the type of execution, at least in my opinion, at least the quality of execution that you could in these markets. I mean, they're really just set up perfectly for this type of trading and this type of environment. So I guess that's a long way of answering your question, and yeah. Is to say that, yeah, the... Yeah. The execution
is not too shabby.
Yeah, that's the technical term.
With regards to price and time, because that's what options are all about. With regards to price and time, when you're doing the shorter term contracts, you know your price is a little bit closer to what they call the money, where the market's trading. Do you ever look at further out of the money and maybe additional time, or do you not much of a proponent of selling too much time.
No, absolutely. In fact, I just gave kind of an example there, but a lot of our strategies are, and of course, it depends really on other market conditions, in particular, for example, the VIX. So the VIX is elevated, you know, then we can go with shorter duration and wider spreads and still capture a lot of value, or vice versa. But if the VIX is kind of, I don't know, let's just say where, well, normally, when I say normally, the old norm used to be a VIX of around 20, but in the last 6, 7, 8 years, that's not been the case, as we know. Been down as hovering around 10 and so forth many times. But so yeah, we'll sell positions that have 60, 70 days of time. And then of course, you can have a much wider spread that way and give yourself, you know, more distance between the current price and the strikes that you're selling. Like we have some Condor trades. I don't know if many of the people are listening familiar with the Condor trade, but essentially it's real simple. You just, you sell a put spread below the market and you sell a call spread above the market. And that's all it really is. You do that simultaneously in one order. And you look for the market to then stay in a range between the puts that you sold and the calls that you sold. And that's really, you know, that's really the definition of a Condor. So yeah, we'll sell those Condors and look for the market to stay in a range. And then as time goes by and those options lose, well, the theta decay has an impact. So day by day, you're losing time. And unless the market's really taking off one way or another in a large enough manner, large enough magnitude, you know, the value of that spread, the whole idea is that it's going to decrease in value and then you can close it out at a lower price than where you sold it. So that's what we do. And we can automate that process too. So that's kind of
I think that it's nice to have some type of software to kind of help you with the strike selection and exit strategies and everything else you can do. You know, the VIX, you know, jumped up pretty big in May, and Leon Cooperman, who's kind of a famous investor, was on TV and he said on his way over to the studio of CNBC, he sold the 2250 puts for 15. And, you know, when you get a VIX spike, and if you don't think the world's coming to an end, these premiums can get extremely fat and very far out of the money. So,
right. Absolutely. You know, it's and odds are it's not coming to an end. So it's, well, you know, odds
hadn't
are
that, hadn't yet anyway.
Right. You know, it's funny. I'll take 30 seconds. You mentioned his name. I was at the SALT conference. I don't know if you guys have heard
of
that.
Yeah. I heard of it.
I attended that, and that was actually really interesting. But I happened to show up a little early at some event, and there's this gentleman sitting there, and I thought I recognized him, but we got to talking, and he introduced himself as you know, Lee Cooperman. So anyway, I was able to sit with this guy, this gentleman, for 20 minutes, just the two of us on the couch, showing pictures of our kids and his granddaughter, and talking about school and a little bit about the market. But that was a very interesting,
hey, good guy
conversation. Yeah, real easy going. And then of course, you know, I walked around the corner somewhere and I ran into Peter Schiff. And,
oh, yeah.
And he's just as excitable as he is, you know, in person as he is on TV. Anyway.
Well, no, that's great. And Jake, with regards to the gold and silver, I mean, you know, it broke above the 1350. It has its run up to 1550. The RSI on silver and gold went through the roof, and now we are pulling back a bit. On your platform, do you have anything that's giving any kind of an indication of if you were going to entertain an entry level, what areas might be support or anything like that?
So me personally, looking at the chart, so our platform has a number of different ways that can kind of help anyone's analysis be more efficient. So it's not necessarily like a signal that we give out. But one thing that, you know, there is that gap from August 6th that tried to fill on the 13th, but or I'm talking about GLD right now. But, you know, I'm just thinking from just a chart perspective that that may kind of continue to try to fill. But, you know, at the same time, this is a pretty strong trend. So it's kind of, you know, just follow the trend with this one. I am at, you know, right around like 140 on GLD right now. And, you know, that could be something to look at. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's however anybody wants to use the platform and look at the prices.
Yeah. And like you on the platform, there's so many different ways to analyze it. You wouldn't, you know, be plugging just one way, because again, that defeats the whole purpose of having plenty of different lenses to look through before you make make your ultimate decision.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's the thing. The more resources you have, the better chance you'll have at kind of making a less biased decision. And that's what we really aim to solve with the platform.
Yeah. If you look at the chart on GLD and you go back, you know, on a 10-year graph, you can see there were lows back in 2011, 2012 area and 2013 that were right around 150. And there was like three lows there. And when it broke that level of 150, it really went into the toilet. So obviously this move, which was fast and furious up, this 150 level area, you know, the high's been around 147. That ballpark neighborhood is definitely a neighborhood which would make some sense that you could back off of. Yep. And that's basically what's gone on there. But the under fundamentals and the objectives and the goals of the Fed and the administration, you know, certainly are not unfavorable to the gold longer term. And who's to know that it couldn't get on the bicycle even bigger if events and circumstances exacerbate, which sometimes they tend to do. You said you do some things with Bitcoin, Jake. Did you say that? You can follow it on your platform, right?
Yes, I definitely follow it. I don't trade it much just because I'm not a huge fan of the kind of 24/7 type approach to that. But I definitely follow it, and it's been one to definitely watch. And it's just interesting to see, you know, a lot of younger traders, instead of buying gold, they buy Bitcoin, or, you know, it's just a new way of kind of looking at a store of value. And it will be interesting to see if we can kind of hold this level. I'm looking at the monthly right now. It looks relatively kind of, strong, but at the same time, there is a pretty big descending triangle on the weekly. So we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah. The big thing with Bitcoin, you know, is the policing of it. You know, if something goes wrong, who do you go to regulate it? You know, who do you, is there any referee out there, or is it just hackball? You know what I mean? Obviously, it's gone way up, way back down. So people who can play those swings and get in and out, you know, they can make fortunes on it. But from the overall mainstream, I think people would like to have something that is a little bit more, has a couple of cops out there so you don't get into the wild, wild west.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the thing is, we just had a big MACD breakdown on the weekly as well. And it's kind of the same thing happened last time in January of 2018. MACD crossed. All of a sudden, we ripped right back up. Kind of the same formation as well, kind of like this descending triangle type look. And then, you know, we finally broke down further. So I think the area to watch would really be the 9,000 mark. And if that doesn't hold, there's a weekly close below that, you know, things may be moving down further. But it's Bitcoin. Anything can happen. It's fun to watch, but I generally like to just do analysis on it, provide charts. We'll do a lot of charts on Twitter just to show how you can utilize the platform when looking at the Bitcoin chart. So right now I've got an alert set on both the support around 9,000 and then that descending triangle resistance, which is now right around, you know, 10.7. But as time moves by, that will decrease as well.
Yeah. You know, at the G7 meeting, there was one of the bank governors from the UK, who I guess used to work at Goldman, and he had a very long dissertation on why a digital type currency is the direction that people should go to, because relying just on the US dollar is too risky, he said. With all the acrimony going between all the countries now, you know, it's not unheard of that some type of unit of measure would be created, you know, that could be digital oriented, and sounds far-fetched, but these things happen over time, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not completely sold on it yet as from the fundamental side, but I definitely think it does. The news doesn't lie when you hear about all these bigger companies starting to look at blockchain and that type of thing.
With regards, Eric, AltaVest, when you're working with the E-mini S&P, it's pretty clear, you know, what you're doing with that. Are there other markets that you're kind of working with? And again, you say on some basis you have some kind of software that can spit out certain trading ideas?
Right. That's a good way to put it. Spit it out. That's what we like to do. Yeah, the answer is yes. We trade basically the E-mini complex is what we've kind of narrowed it down to in terms of being the best opportunity for what we do. It gives us the best, really the best execution, and also just the really
and the least amount of leverage too.
Right. Well, and you can get very granular. So, you know, for example, one iron condor spread on that, you know, the type of spread that we're going to typically do on the E-mini S&P 500, the person's going to need about $1,000 per spread to trade that and not have to worry about, you know, that completely covers any risk and whatnot. Your maximum exposure is already predetermined in advance. Your maximum reward is predetermined in advance. And so really, you don't have any worry. Yeah, there's no worry about margin calls or getting forced out of a trade or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So you can get very, very granular. If, you know, if a person has, you know, $27,500 or something, and, you know, they can over time decide to trade this and that spread and trade a quantity of a few here and a few there and whatnot. And if you're trading the big S&P, you know, of course it's five times that. So you don't have that granularity, but yeah, we, so right now, you know, every now and then on occasion we will post the trades on the Russell and the NASDAQ, the E-minis. In fact, they're always available, but we don't always emphasize those. It just depends on the environment. And if we feel we can accomplish what we want with the S&P, then we'll just stick with that. And so, yeah, we're selling oftentimes, like for example, here's a model today on an end of month October trade for the S&P 500, the mini. It has 53 days till expiration, and you know, the put, the algorithm generated the trade that shows the put that we're selling at 2680, and that put has a delta of 9.9. So essentially that's the approximate probability of that option expiring in the money is less than 10%. So really 90% chance of that option expiring out of the money according to the delta there. And then the call that's being sold is a 3170, and that has a 6.13% delta. So you're talking about maybe 94% chance of that option expiring out of the money. So those are the kind of higher probability trades that we're really focused on. And I do like to stress, though, that that doesn't mean there's a 90% plus chance that you're going to make money on the trade. That's a different thing. Yeah. It just means...
Whenever you're working with any data, it's only working on data that you've got. It doesn't have the data that's going to come in. So what you're saying is right now it has these kind of probability measurements, but you know, things will be changing and those probabilities will change with
Yeah, those deltas change every time the market makes a move, right? So, but nonetheless, that's the starting point for that trade, you know, based on the implied volatility and so forth. And then of course those options are covered at the same time. That's the whole point of these trades, or they're always covered. So yeah, we're looking basically to sell higher probability trades. And in this case, that particular trade being an iron condor, you're selling it, so you're collecting premium, and you want the index to stay basically range bound between, you know, 2680 and 3170. That's the range over the next, 50 days or so. But we never hold trades till expiration. We're always going to get out, whether it's for a gain or a loss ahead of time. So we never hold these trades till expiration. So if we can capture, 70% of our maximum potential, and then we'll take that money and take it off the table and move to a different trade. And there's some formulas behind that too, in terms of the timing, depending on how much time is left, you know, how much premium do you want to pull off the table? And so anyway, that's
and your software is helping people with all of those numbers. In other words, the probability or the delta on this is X when we started, and we got X amount of money. When the premium goes to a certain point, you're no longer getting paid anymore, so you would get out of it. Or if the delta rises to a point where the danger may be different, that might be another reason to get out.
Right. I think that's a good summary. So the software is called ThetaTrader, and yes, it's all pre-built. These are all pre-built option spreads. So all of these spreads are generated with an algorithm we created, and it will basically create the spread for you with all the different metrics, all those parameters and whatnot, and make those visible to you. And you know, the pricing, the deltas, the strikes, and you can look at those on a graph. You can see how the trade looks on a graph, see your calls above, your puts below the market, see where the market is. And you can even modify the strikes if you like, but most people don't. Mm-hmm. And then quite simply, you just select the quantity you want and click place the order, and that's it. So yeah, that's correct. That's the whole idea behind ThetaTrader. It takes something that's typically complex and a bit overwhelming for most people, even professional traders. It can get to be a bit of a pain. And in fact, tracking the trade is a big problem. Try to place one of these trades with your FCM and track it, you know, on your statement. If you get a bunch of trades going all at once, it's a nightmare. I mean, because you have trades offsetting and strikes offsetting and quantities. And it's just the most un-user-friendly thing you've ever imagined. So that's why we created this in large part. So not only does it generate the trade, but it tracks the trade in a really easy to see user-friendly format.
And you're trying to look for a transaction where people can identify their risk capital. They have a number that they've assigned that is appropriate for them. And then because you're working with the spread type strategy, they've got reason to believe that there won't be a knock at the door.
Right. Yeah. It's everything's predetermined in advance. You know your maximum risk and your maximum reward. And therefore, you know, when you move forward with that position, there's going to be no surprises, at least in that regard.
With regards to markets that have been kind of out of favor, obviously in the commodity sector, soybeans, they got hammered down towards 8. Now they're in the 850 area after having a run up. And, do you guys have any software that would indicate where either crude oil, which is kind of caught in a band, as well as soybeans, which are kind of caught in a band, what kind of futures they may have technically? Jake? Let's start out with Jake. Jake, you have anything on that? Because, again, a lot of people are looking at the oil. The oil shares have really dropped. Look at those big yielding stocks like British Petroleum, Oxy, Royal Dutch, and then the list goes on. If we're not going to break under 50 and we're going to go 60, 65, there's value down there for somebody. But and on the soybeans, are they, if we ever got a deal or, how this crop report comes out as they start announcing yields, there could be opportunities in those two markets, which don't look very good now, but, things change.
Yeah, no, I definitely, as far as oil goes, I think that one's always a fun one to watch, especially, after some of these smaller companies in oil have started to turn around. And generally, when I'm starting to look at oil and I see some of these smaller kind of debt written companies starting to make a move, is risk off again or risk kind of on, meaning people going into oil again? So it's hard to tell, but I definitely think oil, if the market continues to move up, I think oil is going to continue as well with it.
Yeah, a lot of people look at USO when they're trying to figure out oil, and USO is attempting to clear and stay above 12. It's definitely in the Missouri show me state because it's just beginning to do that. But, it's moving away from the 52-week low of 923, not toward it.
Yep, that's a great example. Last week, that filled a gap perfectly from August 8th and then just absolutely has ripped since then. So it's looking pretty healthy to me.
Eric, on the soybean or crude, is there anything that you guys are seeing software-wise or technical-wise that could indicate if we're going to get out of the woods here or not?
Well, I'll just make a comment about those in general, commodities in general. The software we developed, it can be applied to just about any market, any commodity or futures market, of course, that has an options market with it, but it's just not as suitable and it doesn't really apply as well in those other spaces for various reasons, partly because of the depth of the options markets and some of the other commodity markets, but also the volatility. So you have a market like crude oil, for example, and I think it's fair to say that day by day, it's going to be a lot more volatile than, the E-mini S&P 500. A large move in the E-mini S&P 500 on a given day could be 2%. That's a pretty sizable move. You don't often see a stock index move 2% in a day, but meanwhile, you see commodity markets, more routinely make those types of moves day by day, or even bigger, or even individual stocks, right? So that's part of what we talk about when we talk to prospects about what we do, and we kind of compare some of the activity in individual stocks and compare that to an index. And that's kind of why we like the index better for what we're doing. It's just there's just less volatility and it just makes it more suitable for selling those spreads. But we do have clients that are trading all different markets, maybe not exactly with our platform, but doing other things. They might even be using Jake's platform, for example, and doing their own analysis. But the corn market, I know, is just completely fell out of bed here the last couple months. And soybeans to some degree, although not quite as bad. But I would say I had a guy call me the other day, and he's a farmer, actually, and so he's getting ready to buy corn again. So I don't know, is that inside? Does that count as inside information if you hear from a corn farmer?
I had a guy in North Dakota say the same thing. So I guess it's, and you know what he said, though? But don't buy anything on my opinion.
Right. Yeah, in fact, I know that, you know, sometimes the guys that are closest to it or gals, can't really see as clearly sometimes, but nonetheless, you know, they have a lot of knowledge and wisdom, and I like to hear what they have to say.
Yeah. I remember years ago when soybeans went to 17, the elevator operators were all short against the inventory they had, but some of them shorted more than the inventory they had, and they got squeezed because they couldn't deliver, and the next thing you know, they were all in the soup. So,
right.
But essentially at AltaVest, you're trying to focus on diversified risk with the stock indices. You're trying to focus on liquid options because you can't have the bid offers so wide that you can't do the spread.
Right.
And also that, you don't have a specific event risk with a commodity, be it gold or any of these, which would be, you know, very, very risky compared to generally the broad-based stock index.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. We've narrowed it down into that particular space for those various reasons. And, you know, we've automated that process to a large degree, and someone can actually really put this type of trading, they have access to it, which in the past is usually reserved for, you know, more professional traders or a money manager or hedge fund or institution. You know, those are the types of entities that are typically trading these types of spreads. And you know, now we can really make this available to the individual retail trader, and they can do it very, very easily. They can receive a trade alert on their phone and just touch accept if they want to place the trade. So we've even made it that much easier. They don't even have to go to the platform. But yeah, so it just tracks everything. It pushes it out, monitors everything, and really puts everything on autopilot.
Yeah, and you can build positions and you could do size because there's depth of the markets.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The more size you bring to this market, the better the execution is actually. So right. The more volume, the better.
Right. All right, well, we're coming to the top of the hour right now, guys. So what we're going to do is give each one of you guys, again, reintroduce yourself and the website. And again, if you have any special offers, this is the time to shoot them out. And also make sure people are clear on exactly how to get a hold of you and to see exactly what you're doing over there. So Jake, real quick background again on yourself, and then TrendSpider and any offers.
Yep. So I'm one of the founders at TrendSpider, and I work mostly on the business development and product development as well. And TrendSpider is a charting platform at the base, but it also gives technical analysts and anyone who uses charts the ability to make a lot of the processes they do more efficient. And we're working on a lot of ways to visualize volume and price action better. And we have Raindrops out right now, but we're also working on a few other projects too. You can use the coupon code SPIDER15 for 15% off up to 12 months. And you can go to trendspider.com to check that out. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to hello@trendspider.com.
Yeah, and I think the main thing is many people are using platforms, and if you have not tried or looked at TrendSpider, it makes a lot of sense to compare what the platform is you're using now and see if the bells and whistles on Jake's platform might be of a superior use for you. And I think that's the main thing. Anybody who's using a platform should at least take a look at this thing and see if this could up their efficiency as far as buys and sells.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much for that. And it's really all about making the whole process to save time and not have to stare at the chart all day, because a lot of people can't do that. And even if you are a full-time trader and you're looking at more than one stock, it's really easy to lose track of what you're doing. And this really helps you kind of keep everything in check.
Okay. With Eric, a lot of the stuff that Eric's doing with the credit spreads involve letting time go by. And so for people who have a very active schedule, the software and that type of activity might be something to look into. And Eric, again, a quick background and what can they get from AltaVest?
Sure. Thanks, Jim. Well, I've been in this for quite a few years now, since 1991. AltaVest is a brokerage firm. We started in 1997, and we developed our own options trading technology. It's called Data Trader. So it allows basically retail traders to have access to something that is typically reserved for more sophisticated or professional traders. We're selling option spreads on the E-mini S&P 500. So we're collecting premium. These are always covered spreads. These are not naked options. Your risk and reward are predefined ahead of time. You can receive these trades as a trade alert directly to your smart device. And if you would like a demonstration, you can go to cf.altavest.com/TT free 30. So that's kind of a mouthful, but, or you can just go to altavest.com and you can find out how you can just sign up and get a demo for the Theta Trader platform. It's free, no obligation. And we'd love to tell you more about it.
Great. Okay, guys, this is the end of the the broadcast here today. Everyone, I want to thank everyone for listening here today. You've got a lot of information. Both of these guys have got things you definitely want to put on your radar and get more familiar with to see if it could be of service to your investing. And for Jake and Eric, I want to thank everybody. I'm Jim Kenney. If you'd like to reach me and find out what I'm doing and things that I'm up to, it's optionprofessor@gmail.com. So just shoot an email over. I'll be more than happy to respond. I'm going to send it back to David here now. And again, guys, thanks for the broadcast. It was a great one.
All right. Thanks, guys. Just a quick reminder to everyone watching, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. And you can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to the recording of this or any of the past shows. Be sure to join us for the next episode of Analyze Your Trade, 4 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow. That'll be September 10th, and Jim will be back to moderate, and Larry Gaines will be on that episode. Also, over the weekend, Anka Metcalf was supposed to be on today's episode. She had something come up and wasn't able to be here. But over the weekend, her and I hosted the second Synergy Traders lecture series that her and I created. And her and a few other traders gave some great lectures. Actually, Jake here was on the first one a few weeks ago. So that's also on Timing Research.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, have to have you back on another one. So, but for anyone watching, if you want to check out those lectures, those are just go to Timing Research and scroll down a bit, and you can find those there as well. And just want to thank my guests again for today: Jake Wujastik of TrendSpider.com, Eric Gebhardt of AltaVest.com, and Jim Kenney of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
All right, thank you for having me.
Thank you. See ya.
Bye bye.